Anyway, Revelation chapter 7. It's a good thing that, you know, it's really been neat for Michael that he doesn't have to go to work.
Always. He's able to come to Bible study.
Huh? So it's a good thing he gets the opportunity to come to Bible study.
Studying Revelation.
Drive people when they need to go places and help out.
You just couldn't let it lie, could you?
You had to spend an hour a day with Michael Molloy, as you feel the same way.
I spend a lot of time with him.
He left for you on every
time. Huh?
He left for you. Not stop.
He drives.
He's a lot of time with me.
All right. Anyway, the when you read Revelation and you read chapter 6 and chapter 8, it's massive destruction. It's mountains falling, and it's just terrible. But there's an interlude, and that's what we started to talk about yesterday in chapter 7. And it's like, it's God gives us a view of His mercy between these two terrible, destructive chapters, or sections, or they didn't have chapters. And we studied yesterday about the four winds and how they were going to, the winds are the, they're being held back. These are the destroying winds that melt rocks. But anyway, now the veil is pulled aside. And he says, hurt not the trees. Hurt not, what does he say? Hurt not the earth, neither the sea nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. Three. And then in verse 4, I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. And it goes down and says, for each of the tribes of Judah, of Reuben, of Gad, of Asher, of Naphtali, of Manasseh, of Simeon, of Levi, of Issachar, of Joseph, Zebulun, and Benjamin. There's 12,000. So there's 144,000 that are sealed. Now, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, that means that there are only 144,000 people saved. There are an infinite number of different people's interpretation of this, and let me just go over some of them. What?
Woodrow Band is practicing.
What?
A Woodrow football band, high school band, practicing.
Well, we need some background music. The Seventh-day Adventists say it is a number who will be eating or observing the Sabbath when the Lord comes. The Jehovah's Witnesses say it's them who are to be saved. These are the overcomers. That's through good works, you have will be one of them. A sect called the Flying Roll believe the vision belongs to them, and that their blood is to be cleansed and given immortal life on earth.
Can we call ourselves the Flying Roll?
No. And again, most theologians that are serious identify the 144,000 as the true church, the redeemed from all ages of time. What I think it means is something different. I think it represents the 144,000 that were priests and Levites at the time of Christ. And they're taken from all the different tribes because the type is finished. In other words, you no more have to be a son of Levi to be an Aaron to be a priest, or a son of Levi to be a Levite. It's just, it's a figure, a picture of that. What at the death of Christ, there were 144,000. And that's significant. Because we go on, and it says, I forgot one. This is the one that gets me. Some believe that these are, actually correspond to the tribes of Israel. Even though the genetic records and geological tables are lost, that God has kept track of all of the little Israelites.
What is the word actually mean, this sealed? What is sealed?
Like you're going to seal a document.
And those are certified, bona fide, authorized.
Yeah, there's.
Assuming they are the ones that understand.
No, I mean, it says, it, there's two different things. It says, hurt not until we have sealed the servants of God in their foreheads. Now, we're going to see now, and it's talking to about an innumerable number. But then, for some reason, it talks about the 144,000. And again, the only reason that I can think of that it's talking about the 144,000 is to show that all of the offices of the body are fulfilled in terms of leadership and function of in those 144,000. But now we're going to see there's an innumerable number of others that are around the throne whose robes have been made white in the blood.
We've talked in the past about how 1,000 doesn't mean 1,000. 1,000 means innumerable. Like
the cattle on 1,000 hills. Yeah, but this is specific. This is 144,000.
Well, what I was going to say was the 144,000 is 12, which is a mystic number, and it's 12 twelves times an innumerable number, which is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. And again, the point of it is we can't know. All we can know is that, as he said, on the breastplate of the high priest, there were 12 stones, there were 12 tribes, there were 12 apostles. The 12 is a number of completeness. And 12 times 12 is like ultimate completeness.
120 is a new city.
Right.
A long time ago, I said, I should have hoped that I'd be one of those 120.
Times 120. Yeah. All right, well, let's go on. This is where I want to see. Okay, in verse 9. And after this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands, and cried with a loud voice, saying, Salvation to our God, which sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb. And all the angels stood round about the throne, and about the elders, and the four beasts fell before the throne on their faces, and worshipped God, saying, Amen, blessing, and glory, and wisdom, and thanksgiving, and honor, and power, and might be unto our God forever and ever. Now again, we've talked about before, all of the four beasts have bent down. The 24 elders had bent down. The innumerable multitudes had bent down. And the meaning, again, obviously, is it's finished. And they're testifying that it's finished. Now, and one of the elders answered, saying unto me, What are these which are arrayed in white robes, and whence come they? And I said unto them, Sir, thou knowest. And he said unto me, These are they which came out of great tribulation, and have washed their robes, and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Now I teach that we teach here, I believe, that great tribulation, or the great tribulation, is the same as the valley of the shadow of death. Great tribulation, the valley of the shadow of death, are just two ways of describing all of time and space. And those that come out of the great tribulation, those that come out of the valley of the shadow of death, who have washed their robes in the blood of the Lamb, those are the great multitudes. In other words, their only rightness is of Christ. They're never concerned with their rightness about anything else. And that's what we've talked about in every Bible study forever. So there's no place to take a stand. There's no place to have an opinion. There's no place to do anything, except everything is reference to Him. Never mind. Therefore, are they before the throne of God and serve Him day and night in His temple. And he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. And again, in Greek it says dwell within them. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. Neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them unto living fountains of water. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There's no more mourning. There's no more need for any sustenance save the sun. There's no more need for any worth save His blood. There's no need for the sun or the moon or the stars or anything else, because He, the Lamb Himself, is the light of the temple. And this is the testimony of those whose robes have been made white in the blood of the Lamb. Now, nothing affects you. It doesn't matter whether people are nice to you or not, or whether people accuse you or not. It doesn't matter whether your mind accuses you of something. It doesn't matter whether something you want to happen happens or not. Nothing affects you, because you gain no sustenance or satisfaction or worth from anything, and you don't need the light of anything except the light of the Lamb. And that's the interlude that we're talking about between this two chapters of great destruction. And he pulls back the veil and lets us see what the finished is. And he wants us to continue to walk in that finishedness. Now, everybody understand this a little bit? Anything you don't understand? Anything you... Anybody have any other response? Can we turn a fan or something on? The air conditioner is on? It just kicked in? Well, let's close the door then. Now all hell breaks loose in chapters 8, 9, 10, and 11, 12. Now in chapter 13, it repeats what we've been studying in another way. Let's go there real quick, and we'll just spend the rest of this time reviewing this again, because it's chapter 13. All right, John, and he's talking, and he said, I stood upon the sand of the sea, stood on the beach. Every place in the scriptures, the sea represents the still waters. Running waters represent spirit. Still waters represent the human race. I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Every crown, every head, every aspect of that number that he saw come up had written on it the name of blasphemy. The only thing that it can do is deny the foundation. Deny the foundation. Deny the foundation. That's what blasphemy means. Now, again, I believe with everything in me that John saw himself rising up out of the sea. And when he saw himself, he saw all men. Now, whether you believe this or not, it's not going to affect whether you're saved or not, but it's going to affect whether or not you're going to be able to go to war with your mind. This guy that I talked about yesterday, he was convinced that his role in life, because of the scriptures that talk about space and the wonders of and the stars and all that, he was convinced, and it cost him a marriage, two marriages. He was convinced that God had told him that he was supposed to create this pocket of wealth so that man could have dominion over space. Well, he's not doing it. He did about as well as any of the rest of us done.
You know, that ties in what I was thinking here, that the name of blasphemy is not so much some little scribbling on a forehead. The name of blasphemy is your behavior, your response to life. And that's a good picture of it there. His response is, here's what I have to do to make life good.
Everything that covers, again, the leopard, it says, well, and the beast I saw was like a leopard. There's a whole, you know, we can go all over the place. You can go to Isaiah 11, 6, and Jeremiah 5, 6, and Jeremiah 13. And Daniel 7, and Hosea 13. And here, Revelation 13. You can go to the Song of Solomon, Habakkuk. But they all indicate a number of things. That the main thing is that they come from the mountains. The leopards live in the mountains. And the leopard, no matter what his behavior is, he cannot change his spots. And so no matter how tame they are, no matter how nice they are, you know, their purpose is destruction. They're silent. I wrote some stuff here. They're silent. They're swift to destroy. The spots inherent with birth. It's a sinner who admits that he has some spots of things, but thinks he has some good in him. Sound familiar to any of you? The bear works quickly, silently, slyly, with no apparent anger or hatred, even when he's attacking. He sometimes seems docile, but everything, you know, it's a picture of destruction. The lion, even when ready to attack, the face remains placid and calm. Never constructive, always destructive. So he has the beast was like unto a leopard, and his feet as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seal and his seat and his great authority. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly head wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. The snake, which is another part of the constant picture, was destroyed at the cross. It's from Genesis 3, you remember? The seed of woman shall bruise or overcome or crush the head of the serpent. So the seed of woman has crushed the head of the serpent. But he is raised from the dead from the deadly head wound. How is he raised from the dead? By each one of us. By giving him breath. By giving him importance. In other words, by giving any credence to your thoughts or to your emotions or to what you see, your sensory perception. That's how you raise this evil one from the dead in you, the temple of the living God. I say it, and I'll say it till hell freezes over. Each one of you have invented yourself, and there's this person that's masqueraded as you for your entire life. You've never known who you are. You've never known your own destiny. None of us have. But we've taken little pieces from a thousand different stimuli and created a being that we think is us. And some of you are hanging on to that being with dear life. Doesn't matter whether that being is positive or negative. You need that being, because without it, you have no life. I talked to that guy yesterday for, seemed like forever, but he said, I can't hear this, that just sounds like death to me. And I said, you've heard correctly then, maybe for the first time in your life. But he couldn't accept it. He said, if I did that, I'd just sit around blank. I said you don't believe in the ability of God. You have a form of godliness but deny his power. But you have to see that you are an invention, a masquerade. That's why you couch your words and try to figure out the right time to say something and tiptoe around somebody of authority, and you and treat others differently than you do others. And I mean, it's because this created being must be revealed. And the closer you live with others, there isn't a man or a woman who's, I mean, a husband or a wife whose spouse doesn't see the created being in the other person. Now that's why God's intention is for us to live in community. So that we can see that created being that instead of Christ in each one of us and speak to it to exhort each other daily while it is still called today. I despise that created being, that facade, especially in me. But God, I despise it just as almost as much in others. What? What?
I'm just laughing at myself because when you say stuff like this, there's a little thing in me saying, well, you're just that way too. You know, it's this little justifier guy that wants to avoid the...
What does that little justifier guy look like? What, about 5'9"?
He's got powder on his hands and little tights. Big tights. And he's the son of a robot. And he goes like this a lot.
Mine is like that beast that comes out.
That's your guy.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about yours. Like your little
Mary,
pink tights.
Like Mary, no. Like Mary, what's her name? When she goes, superstar.
Let's kill that little guy before God he
died. Is there anybody that doesn't recognize yourself in this? Ronnie?
Sir.
Yes, sir. Sir.
You called Jim, sir?
Yeah.
And why do you call me, sir?
Knee-jerk reaction kind of
thing. That's the kind of reactions I like.
Yes,
Mr. Sure, of course.
Yeah,
I tell you what just dawned on me as you were talking was the reason that there's two baptisms, the reason that we dipped twice, the reason that they went through the Red Sea and then they went through the Jordan is part of this inexorable process. The first death is, okay, now I'm a theist. I believe God exists. Now what can I do to save my ass because God really does exist?
Now that I'm a Christian.
And it could take forever to believe. What was it? C.S. Lewis. I heard C.S. Lewis say that when he came to believe, he was a theist. He believed in God, but he did not believe in the incarnation. It was another huge battle to know that Jesus Christ was his life and that he was toast.
Again, remember.
And I recognize that in me.
Remember, that's why there's Deuteronomy, the second law, because it was given just before they entered the promised land to remind them the terrible consequences of paying attention to their own sensory perceptions. The law was given in Exodus, in Leviticus, and we had Numbers, which is their traveling in the wilderness, and some other laws. But basically, then the law was repeated. That's what Deuteronomy means, second law, so that they could understand and know what the baptism in the Jordan was. But the baptism in the Jordan, for those that were able to cross over, they didn't even get wet, because God stayed the flood. And so the picture here is it's just over and over and over and over in the Scriptures. So you start out by believing in Him, which makes you a theist. And someday Jesus is going to return, and He's going to make everything nice. He's going to make everything, make it right. So Jesus was crucified on a Friday, but He's coming back on a Sunday. I mean, I'm just talking. And everybody's living in Saturday. And it's just goofy.
Well, you mentioned this fellow you talked to yesterday about.
By the way, he's a graduate of Southwestern Theological Seminary. He worked for W.A. Criswell.
He becomes a believer and believes he has a mission for God. You became a believer and believe you had a mission. I believe I had a mission. I know Gary did. I think John did.
I
know enough people to know that this is a common experience, that you wake up the next morning and go, okay, now, how can I use what went before and what is now to do what I'm supposed to do to get out of trouble?
How
for
can
the
I,
glory of God.
How can I use my talents for the glory of God? Which is,
now I'm in the wilderness. What do I do now?
How many times have I said? I won't go there. Well, let's go. But the thing, I want to leave us on one word, on one thing, in verse 3. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly head wound was healed. Now, remember, this is in ancient myths. It's in the myth, the 12 labors of Hercules. It's in all the ancient myths. There's a remnant of this mystery that started at Genesis 3. That the seed of woman, there's no such thing as a seed of woman. It's the egg of woman. So the seed of woman prefigures in Genesis the virgin birth. The serpent is going to bruise his or bite at his heel. Now you got all the Achilles strap, and the seed of woman will overcome, crush his head. That's the only story that's been going on ever since, and it's still going on. But the point is, by faith that you have to see that the head of the serpent, you, is crushed. No more giving the slightest hint to what comes from the head. Now, you can't do that until you've done everything else. Either done it or been close enough to know it by empathy. I'm not saying shut up your mind. I'm saying take your mind to the nth degree. Take your emotions. Follow every... That's the meaning of what we've just studied between the destruction in 6 and 8. Now He opened the veil and show you the mystery and His grace, how He's staying the winds, He's staying the destruction until you are sealed in the forehead. To be sealed in the forehead means that you know more. It's what we've seen, what's translated as sober, or what's translated as godly. It's right thought. Right thought is no thought. Right thought is empty thought. Right thought is, boom, the mind of Christ. Total dependence. But the bigger takeaway here, and I want you to find me one thing in the universe that this is true for. And all the world wondered after the beast. All the world has wondered after the beast since the day of the fall. it still is. Anybody whose home is the earth is wandering after the beast. They wander after the beast because you give breath to your thoughts and your ideas and your emotions and your other people's response to you. There's no other possibility, because this is out of time. All the world that has ever existed wandered after the beast. Now, if you can tell me something else, I'll be glad to listen. But boy, I didn't want to know this. When I started this, after he revealed his son in me, and I'm going to be governor for Jesus. I'm going to be president for Jesus. Well, fortunately, it wasn't very, he beat me up. But I've, Kenneth Copeland even, and Pat Robertson even prayed for me for that. Not for president, for governor.
Which proves the fervent prayer of a righteous man avails
much. That's right. No, but I mean, I understand, and I'm not condemning anybody for it. You can only say what you know. You can only see what you see. You can only. But I'm telling you. That's why I keep saying, if this doesn't make sense to you, if you've got something in your head that you've got to do, or something, I mean, go do it.
Excuse me, but for the first time, what you just said makes sense to me about not condemning somebody. What difference does it make? If you're in time and space, if you're in self, if you're in the wilderness, then it doesn't matter whether you're a murderer or somebody that can take it. I mean, so how can you condemn? You're either.
And if you're condemning, if you're condemning, it's the evidence you're still in it.
It's the evidence that you're just as bad. I mean,
that's why it says judge not, because
if you truly escaped from the quagmire, you're not going to judge people because they're wearing blue instead of red or something.
That makes you Cain.
But it's critical that you see this. That, I mean, I can't tell you how much time I spent not wanting this to be true. I mean, I didn't want to know I was the Antichrist. There's a whole lot of people in the audience, yeah, but you are. I'm not, but you are. But I studied all the myths. I studied all of. I mean, you know what? You guys have heard me talk about it for years. I wanted to find any way that I wasn't the Antichrist. I knew I was pretty bad, but not that bad. I'm sort of like, I was like Ronnie. But so, find me anything else, anywhere in time, where all the world is wandering in wonder, or in awe, or in thrall with the beast. If that isn't true, you know, just go somewhere else. If you don't see this finally, anybody?
I was just thinking, if you don't, even people who don't see that about themselves think that the beast has potential in it.
Oh yeah, I get these emails.
The potential of the beast, even though the beast is the hot stuff right now, it's going to really.
Oh yeah, and everybody, I get these emails that say.
I have to go.
Let's say, well, I agree with you what you say, but that guy is still going to go over there to the Middle East and rebuild the temple, right? Well, somebody might, but it has nothing to do with what it says in the scriptures. Well, what gives you the right to say that? I don't know. Anybody? Did anybody else, did all the rest of you just instantly know you were the Antichrist? Took me
a
few years.
Wait, like, when? Today?
Oh, now you're on the forgot crap. All righty. We'll get back to healing now. But I wanted you to, it's like every time we start studying something, and it just has to, you have to take it to the, I don't know what's going on. I wish I had it. I need an agenda. I need a lesson plan that I have to stick to.
This is why you didn't become governor.
Huh?
You just gone off on a big tangent.
I know. I'd have been a terrible guy. On the 10th year anniversary of there was the 15, we called ourselves the 15 for Dallas when we ran as a slate. And on the 10th anniversary of losing the election, a reporter for the Dallas Times Herald interviewed me. And that's when I said, the smartest thing that people of Dallas have ever done is defeat me for governor, legislature. It would just have been terrible.
Did you have club jackets and stuff with 15 on the back?
No, but we had a lot of money spent in advertising in the 15 for Dallas, and then each of us had our own campaigns independent. Viva Olé.
Put your name
in. Viva Olé. Take a big guy quick. I'm getting ill.